Tom O'Casta, Neil Haley's show, and celebrity interviews live from the Grotto with Greg Hanna. Greg, what's going on, man? How are you?
Hey, Neil, doing amazing. How about you?
I'm doing fantastic, and I guess I'm one of those weirdos, but maybe there are a lot. Nine seasons of Coach is a show that I watched every day, I guess, in syndication. Probably watched it when it came out. It just was one of the most funny shows, and we have Claire Carey joining us again, the daughter of Coach. And she did much, much more after that. And we're going to learn about that story and everything. Claire, thanks for stopping by. And wouldn't you agree? I mean, how many Coach fans have you run into in your life after doing that show? A lot, right? That just loved that show to be able to have 200 episodes in nine seasons.
Yeah. I would say that I still meet people who tell me it's one of their favorite shows. I still meet people who tell me that they love to watch it with their dad in particular.
I did. I watched it with my dad and my dad's passed. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. Like it was sort of a way for them to connect with their dad, which of course meant a lot to me because that was kind of my whole entire role in the show, was having this emotional connection with this guy who wasn't super comfortable with all of his emotions. So that was kind of like a main dynamic of
I think that when you think about Craig T, and we're going to let Greg have his questions, is more we're going to diving deep into the show, is when I think of Craig T. Nelson and how well he played this character, it really finally showed an emotion towards the coach and seeing the back office of everything, not the rah, rah, rah. And then I guess the stupidity of things too, that whatever came on the field was not truly what happened. With the show and how you were embarrassed by your dad, showed a great father-daughter relationship developing, but how Claire, your character, which I can't remember the name, that's my
Kelly.
How Kelly really didn't understand, really was not the thought process of, oh, my dad's a major college football coach. And he, you know, and it really was a show in its time that really predicted what the days now with Dion. You know, when we're finally seeing prime time and his real life and how he's going out there as a college coach and he's working and mentoring. Well, that kind of was shown a lot in this show. I guess that's, I never would have thought that parallel, but again, you know, Dion would look like, you know, this genius on the field, but then you see what's happening in the back end and oh dear. And the same thing happened in Coach. But go ahead, Greg, with your first question.
That's a good, interesting parallel you just drew there, Neil. So Claire, great to meet you. Kind of a two-pronged question. Did you always want to be an actor? And tell us about that a little bit, but also how you landed the role on Coach.
Sure. So yes, I pretty much always wanted to be an actor. I lucked out and I had a teacher as a very young kid who let us do theater. I went to a Montessori school, so that meant it was a little out of the box. And so on Fridays, we would do theater, and I took to it, and I loved it. And so it was something I started doing in my life. And then I had another teacher who, I think I was in seventh grade, she helped me get my first agent and actually starting professionally. So it was definitely something I always did. And then right out of high school, I didn't go to college at all. I just went straight to Hollywood. And so the story how I got the job is actually a little bit funny, but it's embarrassing, which is always makes a good story. But I was a bit of a punk, you know, as a lot of 19-year-olds are, a little bit full of myself. And I went into the audition, and Megan Brandman, the casting director, who I owe so much to, I plopped down in the chair across from her, and she says, "How are you?" And I go, "I am so tired." Can you imagine walking into a job interview? And she looks at me and she just goes, "Shut up. You're perfect for this. Now let's read it." So I really have to thank her for not kicking me out of her office when I told her I was tired, because what an ass, right? And then after that, I didn't show up to auditions tired anymore. And I ended up getting the job. They told me a lot of the reason was because they felt that I was a believable Midwesterner. Both my parents are from Joliet, Illinois, and a great deal of my family still live in the Midwest. So I guess all that rubbed off on me.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you think about specifically enough, the right character, the right fit for this show, when you saw the script and you saw how you were going to go opposite Craig T. Nelson, that ought to be daunting at 19. Cause I remember you were considered in college still on the show at the beginning, or already graduated and you're 19 only playing this role.
Excuse me with this coughing.
Yeah, that's okay.
You get to see a little more of my kitchen now, my glamorous kitchen. I was, I think, 20 when we actually filmed the pilot. And I was playing an 18-year-old who was starting college. So, yeah.
Oh,
the story was that I had decided to enroll in the University of Minnesota and to come be a student at the place where he worked so I could be near him.
Oh, yeah, because it evolved in so many seasons. I'm kind of remembering maybe later seasons are reminding me, because look, about 9 seasons, right? There's a lot of growing up for you to do on the show. That's got to be crazy and all that. Go ahead, Greg, with your next question.
So, Claire, what was the biggest learning experience that you had on Coach? Maybe a couple of them, if you had a couple.
Oh, my God. I don't think we really have time for all of them, because it was really it was like my college experience, right? God. I mean, I got to witness the thing about Craig T and why he played this bombastic sort of, you know, unconscious, if you will, character so well, is that he is actually a very conscious person. He's a deeply spiritual, thoughtful, philosophical, you know, intellectual person, a great capacity as an artist. So, you know, those were choices he made in every single thing he did. So the writers would sit and watch the run through. The way we did it, it was like theater, where we'd get the script, we put it up on its feet, we rehearse, and then at the end of the day, we have a run through. Producers, writers, they come down, they sit and they watch. And if the scene's working, you know, ha ha ha, laugh, 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 great, move on to the next. If it's not, it just kind of sits there like a turd, right? And everyone's like, huh, okay, what am I gonna do? So I got to witness these incredible conversations between Barry Kemp, the creator of the show, head writer, and Craig T. And then sometimes some of the other writers and actors, but it was really mainly between Barry and Craig. And they, you know, it just was like an incredible thing to witness the level of specificity and understanding of how to create a caveman character that ended up being able to navigate having this, you know, very upstart daughter, having this girlfriend who became his wife that, you know, wasn't going to let him off the hook. You know, we dragged him kicking and screaming into awareness. And it took a lot of work. Like, you know what I mean? You think, oh, it's a sitcom, ha ha, comedy, you know, a great deal of thought and conversation went into that. So I watched how they worked together, how they spoke to each other. It was a great model for mutual respect. I mean, you know, there were times where it got explosive.
Oh, my.
I learned how to work together. I also, you know, I really got to see what it was like to get up day in, day out, devote yourself to something. I was there for 7 of those 9 seasons, and they were my family. You know, dysfunctional as we were still family. So I don't know if that answers your question at all.
Yeah, pretty great. No,
it definitely does. And let's look into specifically some of the other cast of characters. We have Dauber, that again, it reminds me of me in a way, because I'm 6'10" and he was a big guy and I was young at that time, and it's kind of, I had no common sense when I was my age, when he was playing that character. And then you think of the grandfather type, and he'll remind me of him again. Oh, just, I mean, you had, yeah. Just let's first talk Dauber and how was like that actor. And did he end up doing anything else after that, Claire?
Yeah. Bill Fagerbakke. Primarily you would probably know his voice because he became Patrick the Starfish on SpongeBob SquarePants.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's Patrick the Starfish. He also had a really great role in, do you guys remember the movie? I think it was called The Artist. It was that black and white movie. It was that great homage to silent film. It was, you know, I don't know, 10 years ago. He played a bad guy in it. He was, I think he played like a policeman or a detective or something, which actually, so Bill Fagerbakke is a sweetheart. One of the nicest guys you will ever meet. Absolute doll. He was in an accident when he was young. And so he has a pretty prominent scar on his face. I think it was a bicycling accident, if I remember correctly. Anyway, I just always thought that his looks, because he's so big and because his, you know, pale features, even though he's a sweetheart, he can very easily look very scary. And so I was always like, oh my God, Bill, you have to be the villain. You'd be such a great villain. So he did play a villain in The Artist, but, you know, he's probably up to other things. I mean, these days you can hardly catch what people do. There's so many
projects.
So much going on. There's so many projects. There's so many networks. There's like,
yeah. And you think it, but Patrick the Starfish landing a job like that is huge. Did you see the numbers of what people make in Simpsons? They came out with that, Greg. It was ridiculous. Simpsons and Family Guy and one other big show. And they're making like $550 million net worth, $100 million net worth for just being a voiceover actor. And you wouldn't think that, right? But those big characters are making a lot. So if he was in SpongeBob SquarePants, he's doing well.
Happy for him.
So life after Coach, what have been some of your bigger roles since then?
Well, I would say I did really a lot of guest stars, some of which kind of ended up being a little more prominent. But my favorite roles, God, I don't even know. Let me see. Jericho. How about that one? Let's talk about Jericho.
Okay.
So this was good. So it was a show that John Turteltaub, who's a big feature film director, National Treasure, Cool Running, some other big films, CBS really wanted to work with him. So he found a script that was written by two unknown writers, Josh Scher and John Steinberg, who are now picking it. They just did a series with Jeff Bridges called The Old Man. They're amazing. Anyway, so they had this Jericho script. And so they all took a chance on each other. And so it was really like a feature film on network television. And it was kind of, it was right before The Walking Dead and all these other sort of end of the world shows. I tended to be on the show that was like going to be the next zeitgeist that never really quite made it. I don't know what is up with that. It's a very dubious distinction. But like, for example, I was on a show called Point Pleasant, yeah. Which was a show starring Elizabeth Arnois, who was a girl who was the child of the devil and a mortal woman. And it was like a Buffy the Vampire Slayer kind of vibe. It was very supernatural, high concept. And it was great. It was an amazing 13 episodes. Like it kicked and I don't know, got buried somehow because of network politics. Anyway, so I would say that Jericho kind of also got a little bit buried, but it has a cult following. I don't know if you guys are Jericho fans at all.
I never saw Jericho, but I've heard of it and I know it's still showing up on
those. Okay, so you have to check it out.
Where can I check out Jericho? Like, is it on Netflix?
I'm sure you can find it on Netflix now. Yeah. Gerald McRaney is the mayor. Pamela Reed is his wife. Skeet Ulrich is the older son. The late, great Kenneth Mitchell played his younger son. He just passed away from ALS. And I just want to give a shout out to my pal, Kenneth Mitchell. And he played my love interest. Anyway, it was also had Lenny James, who's from The Walking Dead. And God, I don't know, so many great actors. Just a really beautiful show. Beth Grant, Ashley Scott, the list goes on. And it was a show about the end of the world, but it was also a show about people coming together. So I like to sort of say it was like Little House on the Prairie meets On the Beach. which are both very old references and tell you a little bit how old I am. But you know what I mean? So definitely, please do check out Jericho. It has, get this, you guys, it also had the distinction of being the only network show that was canceled and then brought back due to popular demand. Do you guys know this story?
No.
This is a good story. Okay, so I'll try to be brief. But basically, Skeet, in a scene in the movie, was basically calling back his World War II grandfather's challenge to his enemy. And the guy across the way that was now his enemy, it used to be his neighbor, now it's his enemy. They're fighting a war and they're speaking over the radio. And he's going, "Jake, we got you surrounded. You got to surrender." And instead of saying F off, he uses the World War II terminology that his grandfather had taught him. And he says, "Nuts." Like, as if to say F off, right? So nuts. Yeah. And then, rah, rah. So get this. So there's a Jericho fan who has a company called Nuts Online. And basically, when they canceled Jericho, he set up a way for Jericho fans to just go click, click, and they send a box of nuts to Nina Tassler's office at CBS. And next thing you know, there were 21,000 tons of nuts in Nina's office. And she was kind of like, okay, maybe I need to pay attention to this. And so literally the orders had all been made for all the other shows. It was a done deal. And they brought Jericho back from the grave.
Wow.
So that's why it's literally unprecedented. Hasn't happened before or since. And that's why season two, there's only 6 episodes, because they didn't have money left over to create a proper full budget. So it's like a pared down cast, a pared down storyline. I called the producers. I was like, "You guys, I will work for free. I want to be in this show." They were like, "Right, well, right." Anyway, so check it out. I'm really proud of Jericho.
All right.
Anyway, I've talked a lot about that.
No, that's okay. Greg, I want to just tell you, I just took a look at her Wikipedia, and it's ridiculous. The big shows, Mr. Belvedere. Okay. I love that show. I'm Ally McBeal. You guest starred on Walker, Texas Ranger. She guest starred on, you were Kate McAllister on Home Alone 4 TV film. I would have not thought something like that. So again, we have to, you talked about the Point Pleasant. You were a guest star in Army Wives. You were a guest star again. You even had a reoccurring role in one of the NCIS, right? Isn't that correct?
Oh yeah. You know what? That was a great one, I have to say. So I got to play Gibbs's dead mother. So the story was that when Gibbs was only 18, his mother killed herself. And he really didn't know why. It was something that had scarred him, right? So in this episode, I think it was the 200th episode of NCIS, called Life Before Your Eyes, basically his life flashed back to him, right? So there was like important scene with his dead ex-wife, who also, by the way, was on Jericho. Darby Stanchfield, beautiful, wonderful actress. Anyway, so his dead ex-wife, his dead mother, his dead partner, like all these people who had meant something to him, he had these scenes with. So actually, it's something I'm super proud of. I had it on my reel for a while, but I got to, you know, tell him what happened. I was sick with cancer. I didn't want to have anybody take care of me. I didn't want to have him, you know, mop up my spit and my vomit and all the horrible things that happen when you're dying of cancer. So I killed myself, but it was really intense. And I have to say, Mark Harmon is a way better actor than anybody gives him credit for. And he's also a lovely human being.
Well, how many seasons has he done this? See, this is the kind of thing. It's a dream for an actor to work this many years, right?
Yeah. Well, the reason why is A, it makes a ton of money. It's always in the top 10. Like, people watch the show, they love it.
Yeah.
And also because he treats his crew like family. Like, you know, at lunchtime, he could go eat in his trailer. He could go do whatever he wants to do. He comes and he sits with the crew to eat lunch. You know what I mean?
Wow. That's cool.
It seems like a lot of CBS shows last a long time. You're looking at the CBS end. And again, they talk about the difference between CBS, ABC, and NBC and the type of shows they have. CBS targets more older an older audience, and they've really piggybacked off that and done very well, you know, in the different shows that have lasted the test of time.
Yep. I'm going to go there.
Okay. All right. So Greg has a question that I'm not going to make the final question, because I got good feedback about not rushing people out, but go ahead, Greg, with your question. Then I have a couple more for Claire after that, but this one's the best because this is the one we're going to learn from.
Oh, you want the question?
The question.
Well, before we do that, real quick, what's your favorite project that you're working on right now? You can tell us.
Well, I'm writing. So I have actually a few different things that I'm developing. One is a Black comedy about DNA and family secrets. One is a horror comedy about runaway teenagers. And one is a political drama about two brothers on either side of the divide. So I'm really doing a lot of writing. I was the actor who had too many ideas, and I got fired a few times because I had too many ideas, and I'm not even kidding. So I decided to just start writing so that I could, be the one that throws the party instead of the one who's invited to the party. Nice. You know what I'm saying?
I love it.
So when those are ready and I'm coming out with them, I'll come back and we'll promote them on your show.
That'd be great.
Oh, I have more ideas on this end. I am launching my doc. I don't know if you've been, we are friends on Facebook, but that doesn't mean anything because people only half the people see posts, but I am making a comeback into professional wrestling after 1999. I retired and now I'm 51 and making a comeback in pro wrestling. And I have a documentary, but I'm also pitching the Road Warriors movie about the Road Warriors with Chris Mulkey. Chris and I have a project that we're going to be producing together, where he's the screenwriter and I have a production company, and we're going and trying to get funding. So I'm in Hollywood a little bit now. Go figure. So I'm going to have to learn from you. So there'll be some definitely projects that could align. I've decided to become multi-genre, multi-everywhere. So it's part of my, it's fun for me, but we'll talk.
Why not, Neil? I mean, come on, right? If they can do it, why can't you?
But I know everyone because of the show. I mean, that's the thing. And I'm already going to be reaching out to DDP really quickly about the Road Warriors. It was crazy. Greg, did you see WrestleMania had the manager of the Road Warriors? So I didn't know he was still alive. Paul Ellering was in the, so what a crazy WrestleMania. Go ahead, Greg, with your question now.
All right, Claire.
Make Claire think. Because this is like the deepest one that people will go back in time and look at and this question. Go ahead, Greg.
Okay, seatbelt on. Here we go. So Claire, tell me, what do you feel is the most important thing in life you've ever learned?
Well, I guess the first thing that pops into my head are three words, which are don't give up. I am speaking to myself here because I have a tendency to stop and cry in my pity pot. So I'm going to say that perseverance is really what makes a difference. It's not really, at the end of the day, it's not talent. You know, it's not even good looks or intelligence or any other like quality. It's, can you keep getting, keep coming back? You know, can you just keep showing up? Can you knock on the door again after you've had 99 no's till you finally find that one 100th yes? You know, I think that's what makes the difference.
Awesome.
And are you just doing the writing? Or are you trying to also, are you acting in any of the other projects? Or are you, I saw in 2020, you were in a play, right? So you went to the theater for a little bit. Are you looking to act, or you want to be more writer and behind the screen and then have your roles based on your own projects?
You know, I think it really depends. Like I'm not someone who feels like I need to act. I don't need to be in front of the screen. I'm someone who is absolutely super comfortable behind the screen. Either way, I would say whatever serves the project. You know what I mean? If I have a, like, for example, the teen kind of horror comedy, absolutely am writing a role for someone like myself. But do I know, like, dozens of amazing actresses who could play that part, who I would love to direct. And then they could bring all of their magic to it as well. And then we force multiply.
I love it.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Let's see what happens. But if you want me to be in your movie, Neil, call me up and I will come and act in your movie.
All right. So you're talking about The Road Warriors. I was already going to think of that. So you have to look at that. Do you know Chris Mulkey, by the way? Chris is a man.
We've never met. No.
I would never agree with Chris. I'm shocked. Well, also, if you want to act in a lot of Westerns, I'm really hooking up with INSP. I could be an agent too. Greg, oh, 100 different things. That...
You really so another crazy project I did that no one ever saw was called Doc West. And it's a Western, obviously. So there's a guy in Italy. He's kind of the Robert Redford of Italy. And his name is Terrence Hill. It's a very British sounding name, but he's Italian. And ask any Italian, they totally know who he is. These movies, the Trinity series, these great old spaghetti Westerns, you might know about him. Anyway, he did a movie called, it was a miniseries called Doc West. And Paul Sorvino is in it.
Ooh.
And I get to play a school teacher. It takes place in like 1870 something. And we're all like, you know, driving horses and driving buggies and wearing corsets and like total amazing Western. There's a poker showdown. Anyway, love right. that stuff.
And the best place to find you is go on Wikipedia, go to Facebook, hit you up that way. And we appreciate it, Claire. It was a lot of fun.
Hey, yeah, can I say one thing?
Yeah.
The other thing that I really work on a lot is getting people engaged in being an American. And I just really think that everyone should vote. And it's a privilege and a right to be able to vote. And so I'm just putting that plug in there in this big election year, guys. Don't sit out. Participate.
All right. We appreciate it, Claire. Thanks again. All right. That's special simulcast of the Neil Haley Show and the Celebrity News live from the Grotto. Greg Hanna, guys. Take care.